I'm speaking to Jamie Jamieson. You were one of the people who started this land reclamation, mm-hmm. and we're now going into almost going to be 4 months now.
Tomorrow,
yeah. That people have been here. Can you provide a little bit of an update on the situation here?
Well, right now, the land issue hasn't even begun to be resolved at the negotiating table. Like, even though we are, tomorrow will be into the fourth month, not once has the government ever said, you know, today we're going to discuss the lands at Douglas Creek. Not once. Hundreds of hours has been spent on discussing the removal of the barricades. So with that, you know, we took down the majority of the barricades. We're back here focusing on the land, and they're still not moving ahead, you know, in regards to the land issue. As far as an update, Dalton McGuinty, the premier, is pushing to have us off of this territory. See, my concern with the premier of Ontario, Dalton McGuinty, is the fact that if the army is to be called in, or if there's going to be any more force used on us, that call would come from him. He's the one that's responsible for that. So now that this property is supposedly in Ontario's trust, that is his responsibility. So basically, he holds the upper hand right now. There's no different process or protocol. He's it. So if he wants us gone, he's the one to make that call. And I don't think a lot of people understand the seriousness of that. So right now, he's pushing for us to leave. And history's already proven, you know, with Gunasatage and Iprawash, even though that land is held in trust, the land issue still isn't resolved. You know, with Gunasatage, that was 16 years ago. And with Iprawash, that was, what, 10 or 11 years ago? And for him not to recognize, you know, that we're aware of what's going on with these other territories, and we're not naive, you know, and we aren't going to leave until this land issue is resolved. And by a resolution, we mean having that title and jurisdiction placed back with the Haudenosaunee Confederacy under the Guyana Lagoa, the Great Law, not the Indian Act. So right now, that's where it's at. You know, we're at a stalemate. I don't think they're willing to do that just yet, even though to do that would be strictly an administrative move. That's all it would take, you know, just them signing a couple of papers. But they're not willing to do that. And the battle right now, the biggest battle right now, is between the federal and provincial governments still fighting about who's going to take responsibility. You know, 4 months later, mm-hmm. you know, they're still squabbling about that. And that's why we're not moving ahead, you know, because of their own internal disagreements. So other than that, there's not really anything new to report here.
Mm-hmm. What about the recent payoff to Hanco Industries? Do you or the people here regard that as a victory?
No, not at all. I don't see it as a victory. One thing I had stated at the beginning was there's always a strong alliance between the government and corporations of Canada. You know, without the corporations of Canada, the governments would suffer completely. And after all of, I guess, the hundreds of years that we've waited for some type of resolution in regards to the land issues, you know, look how long it took for them to appease the corporations of Caledonia. What, 2 months, maybe? And, you know, first of all, it was the small businesses of Caledonia, you know, and they don't understand it was our business that was removed from that town. And it was their actions that caused that removal, you know, mm-hmm. acts of discrimination and threats to our safety. And the bottom line is we are not responsible for the success of their economy. Look how prosperous this small town is. You know, look at the homes around here. It's evident there's money flowing. But these people choose to shop in Hamilton, you know, Toronto, wherever. And it's not our responsibility to financially sustain their community. It's theirs. And I don't see how the government was so quick to give them money, like reward them for their racist and discriminatory behavior. To me, that's what that was. And then you have, like with the Hennings, they have so far an interim payment of a little over $12 million. You know, and like I said, they haven't made one move to resolve the land issue. And now they've created what some of us refer to as the Ministry of Hurt Feelings. You know, and you know how bogus that is. You see the kids outside playing. You know, they're not afraid. There's kids playing on the streets at supper time. And if the parents were that concerned, if, you know, I was that concerned, I wouldn't have my children outside playing. You know, that's why I don't take my children into the town of Caledonia. Because I know there's threats made against me. And if we go to the grocery store, or even, like, stop at a gas station, I don't know who will recognize me and carry out their threats, you know, that they've made against me. So, you know, at some point, we all have to take responsibility for our own actions. And I think so far here, we've done that. And the government has just handed out millions and millions of dollars. But as far as taking responsibility for the illegal land titles they've been handing out and issuing, they need to take responsibility for that. Mm-hmm. You know, they do. And they're willing to spend, you know, already, you know, probably cost them well over $50 million when you consider the cost for the police and, like, the police presence and the money they pumped into in corporate Caledonia and with Henco. And they're willing to spend that amount already, like, just within a matter of a few months, and they still haven't made an effort to resolve the land issue, you know, and it's not surprising to us. Everybody pretty much expected that, you know, for us to be put on the back burner and not be addressed, or, you know, like, them really truly being willing to work with us. It's just history repeating itself. It's a hard pill to swallow, but we still have faith. You know, we still have hope that there will ultimately be a resolution, a peaceful resolution. But the more the clock ticks and the more the government speaks, you know, it doesn't look that way, but we're still hoping.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction when you heard that a small group of Caledonians who went to Toronto, to Queen's Park, to have a rally met with the premier? What were your thoughts on that?
Actually, I was pretty surprised and I was overwhelmed. A lot of people, you know, were upset that it happened, but I see it as a positive step, because I think without realizing it, they took our fight there for us. And what better day to pick than Solidarity Day, Aboriginal Solidarity Day? I was pleased with it. I was. You know, I know they made some comments about us, but ultimately, the reality of that situation is they did take our fight on the road. They took it right to the Premier that day, to Toronto.
In terms of resolving it, even if their idea of a resolution is not what your idea of a resolution would be.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, we all want that resolution, you know, as soon as possible. And we all really believe enough is enough. You know, let's sit down and resolve this once and for all. But I was happy that they did it on Solidarity Day, you know, and to me, I viewed it as a step towards indirectly unifying with us by doing that. You know, we didn't have to leave the site, but that message was sent loud and clear that day. But I also am aware that the only ones the government sat down to talk with that day was the Caledonia, I call them the Caledonia Corporate Alliance, because that's who it is. And a lot of the townspeople were upset because their voices weren't heard. Just the regular Jane and John Smiths of the community, you know, but the only voices that were really heard by the government officials that day was strictly that alliance group, you know, who represents the corporations of Caledonia. And I guess if I was a resident of Caledonia, that would be frustrating, you know, to know, once again, only if you have money will you be heard. You know, if you don't, your voice, it doesn't have a place anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I understand that there is a court date this Thursday for Judge Marshall, who is pursuing the implementation and the ratification of his decision for his order for the OPP to come in here and remove people from the site. What are your expectations of it?
Again, it's not surprising. Rather than resolve the land issue, and Judge Marshall knows, I have a book written by him, and it discusses the Haldimand Proclamation. He did a book on the history of Haldimand, and he discusses that. And in black and white, in his own words, it says, you know, he acknowledges that we were given 6 miles on both sides of the grand start to finish in regards to how the, I guess, outcome of the American Revolution was manifested by the Mohawks and Six Nations. You know, he identifies that. And that just goes to prove, you know, like, he knows the truth. He knows why we're here. But he's a part of that system. He's a part of those corporations. And he's also in a position where he can change the outcome, you know, or, like, he doesn't have to push to have those injunctions enforced, especially now that the Hennings, who originally had those injunctions enforced, are no longer the owners. You know, he's in a position now where he can change all that, but he chooses not to. And that's a concern to me, knowing that both him and Dalton McGuinty, you know, they know the history, what happened in Oak, what happened in Ipperwash. And they're talking about lawlessness, and there's been over 28 of our people that have been arrested and incarcerated since this has all began. You know, and how many non-natives have been arrested or incarcerated for their acts of hate and discrimination towards us, you know, for everything that they've done. So as far as there being two, you know, two sets of laws, I agree with that 100%. And it really frightens me to know that those two men are going to use force, and I believe they are, to have us removed from here. It really frightens me to know that him and Dalton McGuinty are in positions where they could have a lot of influence over the outcome of the situation. And like in Oka, they can choose between a peaceful resolution or possible bloodshed and war. And they're choosing that route of war. And I don't know whether they're that naive to believe that nobody's watching, you know, and that there aren't other territories and nations that are going to respond if anything happens to us here. You know, they've done it once already. And on Thursday as well, you know, there's going to be railways shut down. And that's a drop in the bucket to compared to what could happen, you know, with other nations, not just throughout Canada, but throughout Turtle Island and the world. We've impacted a lot of people. There's been a lot of pride instilled into our people. And to me, that's been one of the most positive things about this, you know, is right here on our own territory, so many people are walking with their heads held high, you know, and you see the flags flying and really strong sense of self-identity. And that's something that our people haven't had for a long time, you know, throughout all the different government legislations that had been enforced on us and things like that. And that healing process for us has really begun now. And I've never been ashamed to be Ongahowee. I've never been ashamed to be from the reserve. And my children are like that. They're modest, but they're still proud of who they are. You know, no matter where we go, their heads are held high. And they don't walk in shame. And to know that this has sparked that in so many other people is really, really overwhelming for me. And I'm really glad, like, to be a part of that.
Getting back to Judge Marshall and the Premier, what degree of systemic racism do you think plays a part in all of this?
Oh, that's the root of it. Thinking that we have no right to enjoy our property. You know, it's entrenched in our constitution, the Guyana Lagoa, the great law, to not only, you know, protect and defend our property, but that right to have the use of it as well. And it really, really disgusts me that Judge Marshall, who talks about there being lawlessness, wanting to know why the law isn't being upheld. It's my understanding that with the Canadian Constitution, that is the law. Supreme Court of Canada rulings, those are the law of the land. And to know that Canada went so far as to entrench our inherent rights, Section 35 of their Constitution. They went so far to do that. And now Judge Marshall has the nerve to say, why isn't the law being abided by? But he's violating it himself. He's violating international law, you know, and those Supreme Court rulings, like in regards to the Mikisew and Haida, that's the law of the land. You know, and they talk about notification and things like that, and mm-hmm. I don't understand how they're able to violate their own laws mm-hmm. in order to appease corporate Canada. And that's all it is. For people not to realize that, you have all these law experts, you know, analyzing the Haldimand Proclamation, these different agreement, land agreements, leases, so-called surrenders, whatever. And then some people are saying, well, what should that matter? You know, we're right here in 2006. Let's talk about today. It's like, fine, let's talk about today. Let's talk about your constitution. You know, and it just really upsets me to know that they're able, because of who we are, you know, because of us being Ongahoy people, they're able to violate that constitution, you know, to take our rights away from us, inherent rights that we were born with, and try to throw us into that whole judicial system, you know, which isn't for us, which was never ever designed for us. And they're using that to get us into that system. And it's because of who we are. It's not because we're Canadian citizens. You know, it's because we're Ongahoy people with certain rights. And I think underlying everything, like that whole judicial system is, to me anyway, like, is based on property ownership in the earliest beginnings. Talks of like the teachings of Christianity, Catholicism, all of that. You know, that was all a part of the big earliest forms of law. And that doesn't pertain to us. That's not who we are. But there's no aspect of our culture, of our inherent rights, you know, in that judicial system at all. You know, and to me, that's discriminatory. And like, it was created for one group of people, and that group of people represents, you know, certain individuals who are able to have a certain level of income and a certain level of property ownership. And we all know what color those people are, the majority of them. You know, they're not Muslims, they're not Hindus. Who are they? You know, and that's who that whole system represents. And for those people, you know, like, I consider this the biggest white collar crime ever committed in history. And I truly believe it is. But when you have money, like when you get involved in that system in regards to white collar crimes, as long as you have that money to defend, you're safe. You know, but for us people on the lowest rung on the ladder with not a whole lot of money, when we get in that system, we get lost in it, you know, and we're beaten. We're traumatized to the point to really, truly take all of our spirit out of us, you know, to fall in line with what we're being told is, like, how it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, enough. But I think underlying everything, you know, it all boils down to racial discrimination. I just don't know how they're allowed to continue with that, you know.
For people that are in Montreal and beyond listening to this interview, what can people do as individuals or as groups in order to support this land reclamation now 4 months down the road?
I've been telling people to lobby their local governments. You know, flood them with phone calls, with letters, anything to really make them think, anything that's going to affect their system. And if that's not an option, you know, they can send food, non-perishables, they can hold their own rallies, come down and, you know, spend a day with us, see what's here firsthand. You know, a lot of people hear in the media how we're terrorists and we threaten small children and kids are hiding under their desks and things like that, you know. And I just say, come down and find out for yourself, you know, spend a day with us. And yeah, there's a few strange ones here, but there's a few strange ones everywhere, you know. But we're all working together towards one common cause, you know, and trying our best to stay united. And we need all the support we can get, even just, you know, finding out history or factual information and passing it along, you know, that's a big help too, because a lot of our history isn't being told. So, like, to start from there and to get that history from our perspective, read a book, you know, find a book written by a Native person in regards to not just land issues here, but anywhere in Canada. Pick up a book and read about our great law, because to me, a lot of people, you know, from what I've heard, people are saying, you know, we've tolerated them. We tolerate them. And to me, tolerance is just burying those strong underlying issues of hate and discrimination. You know, it's not moving towards having an understanding. And I think ultimately that's what each and every Canadian citizen needs to have, is to have a genuine understanding of our history and of who we are, to even begin to digest what's going on here. You know, it's hard enough for some of our own people to understand the history of why we are here today. And so out of anything, I guess the most important thing anybody can do is to educate themselves about why we're here, why we're doing what we're doing, how we got here. And once you have a full understanding of that, pass it on. And that's where change will begin. And change is good, donkey.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
I just like to say thank you to everybody who's helped in any way they can. Like, I personally haven't been able to go out and thank each and every individual for all the support that we've received. And there's been a lot of it. And it does keep coming in. You know, it fluctuates, but that support is steady. And that's one thing that I was told, and I believe it's true, is the day that we aren't supported is the day that kitchen is empty and there's no more food coming in here. And we haven't reached that point. You know, there's still... I just like to thank everybody who's helped us maintain what we're doing here. And right now, yes, I am somewhat afraid that something is going to happen soon, like to our people. But I'll just cross that bridge when and if we get there. But until then, you know, please say prayers for us. Do whatever you can on your end to ask whoever you need to help us and protect us.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.